Ladies and gentlemen, although I'm affiliated with the Anchorage, Fairbanks campus, I live in Anchorage, so I'm not really used to this academic leisure. So if you take your seats, we'll get started. Hmm? That's a just a gentle barb to start the what I hope will be some real intellectual barbs. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Dave Hickok. I'm the director of the Arctic Environmental Information and Data Center in Anchorage, which is, however, affiliated with the Fairbanks campus rather than the Anchorage one. And we have, I think, a panel of interesting people here to discuss the role of research in the university systems. And I think they're all well known to you. We have a student with the Institute of Marine Science on my left, far left, that I had pleasure many years ago of flying 300 or so miles north of Barrow in pursuit of the Arctic ice pack, Grant Metecki. Grant, and on my immediate left is Regent Sam Keto, an activist in Native Affairs for many years, and a man that I have been involved with on many occasions on the sources of information relative to the enhancement of Native Affairs in this state. On my immediate right, Dr. Juan Roederer, Director of the Geophysical Institute, and on my far right, Dr. Rudy Krechi, whom I'm sure you all know. Now, without further ado, I'd like to get into the some terms of reference for the discussion. I think what we'd like to do is spend 5 minutes on each participant to set forth their position on the subject of research in the university, which would be then followed by rebuttal statements of 3 or 4 minutes by each participant, and then open to audience participation. One of the things that all of us know, I believe, is that the whole quest for knowledge here in Alaska, whether it has to do with societal and human affairs or with natural resource matters and environmental matters, is that we live in a very dynamic and changing situation. Research is so often dictated by the signs of the times, by the events that take place. Federal involvement in research in Alaska, quite often, documentedly, can be shown that federal research in Alaska resource matters actually leads to decision processes. The state of Alaska, including the university, quite often are not responsive to what is happening with a more dominant sovereign and funds coming from that source. In Alaska today, their research is big business. It's probably in the order of $250 million in research being invested in Alaska today, $250 million. Of that, $40 million or so is associated with this university. That $40 million stems from a $6 million appropriation. These matters, and who does research, what is research, is it applied? Is applied research real research, is basic research more the function of the university, should the university be more socially involved with the matters of our times? All of these things, I think, are questions that your panelists will try to address. Without further ado, then, I would like to turn the program over to Dr. Krechi for 5 minutes, Rudy.
Yeah, thank you, David. And thank you, Vera, for inviting me to this first seminar of this kind. which we could call interdisciplinary seminar. Most of you know my position I'm going to talk about, and I a priori can state that this is a disagreement, you know, with certain trends at this university, which I have represented for last about 16, 18 years of my stay at the University of Alaska. I do not assume that all of us understand the same things under terms like university and research. So, introducing this series, I will try to define what I understand. My definition will be both conceptual as well as cultural, and I will show my position where I stand along doing it. So, university at first. Under university, we understand institution of higher learning, which provides the top education to the generation at a given time. It has a long history. The blueprint of all universities, Plato's Academy, organized in around 350 BC and closed after 900 years of existence. There has not been any other university which existed so long, organized according to program, which was laid down by the master. After 300 years, the idea of university was reintroduced by a learned British monk, Alcuin, who came to the court of Charles the Great and offered a new education where he specified that it will be review of antiquity, trivium and quadrivium. Out of these, we have later development of medieval universities, Bologna, Padua, Sorbonne, Cambridge, Oxford, with development of four faculties. Within these four faculties, the entire curriculum was comprised and offered. Here was also the concept of educated men. Whoever studied in one faculty had to be aware of fields offered in other faculties. Modern introduction of emphasizing science did not disrupt this classical structure of the university. Moved into what was called Faculty of Philosophy, emphasizing more and more sciences. This very structure remained unchanged until 20th century. And with one exception, a new democratic trend was injected into institution of university in 19th century in the United States, democratizing the elite institution of higher learning, which was a traditional Plato's concept. 20th century, in my view, finished the classical concept of university due to involvement with government. Both Nazi regime, fascist regime, communist regime, and under pressure of Second World War and development after Second World War, also democratic universities were more and more under control of the government. At first for the survival, later for catching up in a political and ideological struggle. This was the way how university lost its self-governance, became depending on governmental spending and thus more or less a mate of whims of the government. So far, the university. Research. Under research, I basically understand three expressions of this research. First, I hyphenate, research. This is the activity which has been closely developed with institution of higher learning, which expresses the deepest curiosity of man to know. Here, man tries to formulate his mental curiosity in form of a question, which predetermines the range of answers. Topics are objects of the mind, whatever mind can basically perceive, conceive, or imagine, and combination of these three. It is basically as connected with our traditional utilitarian pursuit. It corresponds probably to the deepest feature of human nature, curiosity. Man does it without asking for money. It is done by very necessity of living. Out of this spring, we have acquired the largest background of human achievement. And these achievements were in the field of science, philosophy, art, all arts. And basically they are carried by this striving for knowledge, striving for basic satisfaction. And all of these fields found corresponding expressions. They were more or less connected very often with higher institutions of learning, moving through the history and emphasizing different activities according to specific times. This type of research moved up to 20th century practically unchanged. Great monuments of this research, this renewed search.
Could you sum up in another minute?
Yeah, achievements, thank you, of Copenhagen School of Quantum Physics. And the greatest creators of 20th century are products of this type of research. Next to this type of research is research which was connected with the conquest of material world, which goes to the whole history of mankind, although it was more or less loosely connected with governments, and produced a very important function in human society. Third type was organized research, which is rather of recent origin, and was answer to, in our country, to survival, physical survival during the Second World War and post-Sputnik era. Organized research, as I see it, is an integral part of stresses and tensions dictated by given time. Topics are changing, government decides in which direction the research will go, and spending determines research activities. Am I through?
Finish another thought or two.
So, outlining this, both university and research, I have a traditional view that university should not be diluted by these temporary whims of our government. University should stay from any interference with government, and for this reason, university should return to its original goal to educate people, not to train people. Next to it, university should review its own mission in the society, continue this integral part of its activity, research, non-utilitarian research, and divorce itself from organized research. Which should be supervised by sponsors or by governments directly, and university. This type of research should be responsible directly to sponsors or to those who pay.
Thank you very much, sir. Next, giving his position on the role of research in the university is Regent Sam Keto. Sam?
Thank you, Dave. I'd like to open by saying thank you to the group of people headed by Vera Alexander to put together such a seminar. And I think that you have put together a seminar that deals with an issue that has been ongoing and will be ongoing and will be a focus of controversy in the state of Alaska. When you speak of education, and specifically post-secondary education. And I do not believe that my invitation was spurred by my activities in the past as it relates to research and funding of education in the state of Alaska. My position in the past has been consistent, and I do thank you for the opportunity at least to present to you my views of research within the role of the University of Alaska. One subject that I wasn't too sure of that we were going to discuss, but I noticed it was in the paper yesterday, and that was the role of the university in competition with private industry. Maybe in question and answers you can ask me the question and I'll give you at least my viewpoint of competition. But at the outset, let's deal with the role of research, at least from my point of view. I have no arguments with the success of research in modern or ancient civilization. I have no argument with research having the ability to provide and assist quality education within a university system. But I do have a very significant problem. When research is allowed to live and thrive in its own environment, and by its own inertia, find themselves growing without direction, or growing with only the direction of the professionals monitoring themselves as to where they're going. It's a motherhood issue that when one raises the question, one is always, at least the attempt is to quell the opposition by stating that one, you are trying to transfer or reduce the Fairbanks campus because research is an integral part of the Fairbanks campus, and to limit the growth of research with some sensible planning about where you're going is kind of shunned to the sun. The success of research that I have heard over the past 3 years since I've been on the Board of Regents has been one when people come to the board and specify with specificity, I might say, that we submitted 290 proposals last year. And by standards, as it relates to other universities in the United States, we have received $36 million or $29 million. And we have been the most successful university in regards to the number of grants and the number of proposals that were funded. And that's a hell of a way to run a ship, you know, to talk about value dollars as to what research is doing. The basic premise of making and understanding what value research does for the educational system should deal with the conclusion of what benefits to the university system academically has research been. That doesn't happen. Who evaluates research? Research is evaluated by their own appointed advisors. The Board of Regents hasn't got into it. The administration has basically let it go by itself. And it has in the past. But you have to have a check and balance. You have to have a direction other than research itself saying where it's going. The report a couple years ago talked about $7 million in state participation. It talked about the number of total dollars that were received. That's when I first got into it, I suppose. And I did object in the tight money situation about prioritizing where you were going to spend that money. What I advocated was a reduction to zero, or at least a reduction of state participation into research, so that we could utilize those monies into instruction. That position also finds itself consistent with trying to, in my opinion...
Another minute or so, Sam.
Okay. It's 4-1. I'll take a little bit more than that.
No. Maybe you'll take what I tell you.
Okay. And it's to say that when you try to analyze what the system is doing, you know, you should at least understand that when you put money into a system that has a limited income of hard dollars. You see, in the past, research has been able to convince the university that the hard dollars were not the state dollars. The hard dollars were the research federal dollars. When in fact, the situation has turned, that the hard dollars are the state dollars. Because in many instances, when you really integrate research into the academic instruction of the university, what happens is a classic case of reducing the funding of programs that were started in research and to want to continue those. And when those are continued, you have to go after the state dollar in order to continue those. I think there are examples that I can list where it's happened. Knox the down to the dollar value. But when that happens, you're taking away from instruction. At least in closing, let me say that the consistency, I believe, in what I advocate, which I have to say I am in the minority of the board at this time, but maybe sometime it will change, is that I would like to see a budget in a tight money situation for the University of Alaska not only freeze their expenditures in research, but to freeze their expenditures into administration and make administration and research eat upon themselves with the dollar figure that we had last year, reallocating the administrative structures so that the amount of money that you had last year, you just spread it a little further. And any increase in the budget, move to instruction. The bottom line is, I would like to see more money get into instruction. And if it's at the expense of research, I will support it. And if it is at the expense of administration, I will support it also.
Sam, I don't think that you're necessarily in the minority. Anyway, there are many people who would join your position. Sam will be followed by Grant Mathecky with his observations. Grant, it's all yours.
Yeah, well, I think it's rather fortunate that I got to speak right after Sam, because it is my view that research in the university is absolutely vital to maintain a high standard of learning, both at the graduate and at the undergraduate level. I don't feel that money spent in research is wasted money, because there are spin-offs that all of the students see. It seems self-evident to me that you need a strong and vigorous research commitment if the university is to fulfill its role in educating people to work independently in basic and applied science. As a matter of fact, when Vera asked me to take part in this discussion, the first thing that entered my mind was that I'd never really thought much about the role of research in the university. It seemed to me that it was part of the natural course of things. In the sciences, at least, and I think really in many of the other disciplines, the graduate student's only or primary reason for being here is to do research. In order to educate people to address both the technological problems confronting society or industry, or to address the intellectual questions of basic research, it's not enough that the university merely impart knowledge. The university must also be able to educate students to create new knowledge. This can only be done by allowing the student the opportunity to carry out his own research in the proper research climate. And this climate requires the guidance and example of the student's major professor, his committee, and a research faculty which has the breadth of experience to aid the student in solving some of his problems and to expand his horizons. Essentially, what I'm advocating is the eminently practical course of learning by doing under the guidance of those who know how. And I think this is an indispensable part of any researcher's education. I also think it's self-evident that a well-respected and active research faculty, plus up-to-date equipment, facilities, are necessary to attract the best graduate students to the university. This serves to ensure that the transfer of knowledge is not unidirectional between the professor, or from the professor to the student, but that it's a multi-directional process, that it goes from the student to the professor, that it goes among students as well as from the professor to the student. It's my feeling that this exchange of information is one of the most rewarding parts of the graduate student's experience, and I think it's a rewarding part of the faculty member's experience. I also think that it serves to improve the quality of education and research at all levels. I think it improves the quality of education at the graduate level as well as at the undergraduate level.
Another minute or so.
Moving to the undergraduate level, I believe that an active research faculty is imperative in maintaining the quality of undergraduate education. Teachers who are involved in the creative aspect of any field, be it science or the arts, bring an added dimension to the classroom. They're enthusiastic about their subject, they're familiar with the latest developments in the field, but most importantly, they give a student a feeling for how the creative process operates, in addition to the standard feeding of facts and theory. It's been my experience, and I think the experience of many, if not most other students, that the most rewarding courses and the most rewarding part of a course, or rather the most rewarding part of a course, are those times when a faculty member was actively involved in research, presents some of his own data. These times that the student gets a glimpse of how new knowledge is created in that field. He gets a glimpse of what that field is doing. In conclusion, I'd just like to say that I think there's a role for a wide range of faculty skills and interests in the university community. This range extends from the researcher or artist whose only teaching contact may be with his graduate students, to the teacher whose primary creative endeavor is the improvement in his ability to enlighten and stimulate his students. I think an active interaction between people with this diversity of interests and skills leads to a cross-fertilization which improves the university experience for everyone. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Grant.
To wrap up the initial presentations, you'll have 5 minutes or so from Dr. Juan Roeder.
I think Grant has quite eloquently shown why a research environment is necessary for the academic function of a university. I think from his examples it follows quite clearly that in order to impart higher education, it just is not enough that students merely acquire new knowledge. They must learn how to generate new knowledge. I would like to elaborate on a converse fact, namely that the academic environment of a university is essential for the advancement of research and technological development of the country. It is at the universities where the human resources are available to solve those problems, whose study is considered unprofitable or too venturesome by the research organizations of the private sector. It is at the universities where the necessary environment of intellectual challenge and academic freedom exists, in which the individual researcher can chart his or her own course of work and alter the course as circumstances demand. It is at the universities where revolutionary breakthroughs of knowledge have a better chance of occurring and of being developed. It is in universities where the individual researcher can be relieved from the short-term public accountability, which is impossible to define and to measure, especially for basic research, and yet remain accountable to his or her peers, who then collectively assume the trusteeship of the public. The sole act of teaching, the motivation to explain in simplified terms, the obligation to formulate clear answers, are intangible but essential stimuli for doing better and more original research. In the universities in our country, research is mostly funded by external sources. Does externally funded research corrupt the academic function of a university? Is externally funded research necessary? Wouldn't it be wonderful if American universities had the financial resources to support 100% of faculty research time? European universities do, Latin American universities do, even Soviet universities do, but ours don't. It is a fact. We may not like it. As an example, if every tenured faculty member at the Geophysical Institute, which is the one I know closest, would suddenly lose all grants and contracts, we would instantly run into an $800,000 deficit. Salary support is not the only need. Research is darn expensive. I think my good friend Rudy Krejci is most fortunate for his research. He needs a good library and to run his $20 to $25 an hour supercomputer.
Not even that, no.
I need a $1,000 an hour computer to run my plasma calculations. Of course, there have been abuses. Faculty who travel to a meeting while they are supposed to teach classes, faculty will go to Washington begging for money while they are supposed to teach classes. There are abuses in reverse. Faculty who don't want to do any kind of research. Faculty who don't want to teach nor do any kind of research. But think in terms of what a student gets, as Grant has stated, in terms of faculty quality and expertise. Can you conceive a music department run with no performing musicians among the faculty? Does research at the university lead to unfair competition with industry? The role of the universities in basic research has, I think, never been questioned. However, questions begin to arise about the degree of university involvement as one moves from basic research to targeted research to applied research. Yet I think the factors that I have put forth before justifying, in my view, university research apply to all kind of research, not just basic. First of all, applied research is the bridge, the only bridge we have to public understanding of our research activity. Let us realize that one of the basic functions of a 20th century state university, particularly a land-grant institution as ours, is public service for the benefit of the state and its citizens. Let us realize that the universities produce the talent, scientists, engineers, which feeds into technology in government and industry, and that they produce research results which feed into technology in government and industry. I strongly believe that universities do not conduct applied research in competition with, but rather as a complement to the private sector. There are hundreds of universities in the lower 48 which run businesses as essential components of their instructional program. Cornell runs a very profitable dairy. They offer research consulting services. I belong to the Denver Research Institute of the University of Denver. They carry out weapons development, University of California Livermore Laboratory. If in some instances competition does arise and the private firm loses out to the university, then I submit the blame should be put on the loser and not on the winner. In summary, I strongly believe that it is the degree in which research and teaching are meshed that is a direct measure of the strength of a university and that it determines its impact on science and technology and, more importantly, on society as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you, Juan. Well, we've had four views, and perhaps I'd like to add another little dimension, if I can. One of the things that have been of concern for me, with me, for over a decade in this state, has been the bridge to the society around us. How does the science of our times get communicated to the people who need to use it? And let me give you a case that is right in the courts of the state right at the moment, involving my center, that I think illustrates what I'm trying to say. Where else can one find, anywhere in the United States for that matter, somebody who would be subpoenaed by Exxon on the one hand, Greenpeace on the other, and the natives of the North Slope on the other, all for the same information, all saying, in effect, to the court and to us, we will rely on what your science is and what the status of man's knowledge is on gravel islands relative to environmental damage in the Arctic. Well, a university has a responsibility to me, in my view, that has not been articulated here, to bring research information, to synthesize research information, and make it available for the societal conflicts of our times. Last session in the legislature, I and others who have worked for over a decade again to pass legislation to establish a Council on Science and Technology in this state. We finally got a bill. We have an enactment. Governor Hammond has appointed this council now. Dr. Neil Davis and I are the representatives for the university, for better or worse. But what we're concerned with here is one of the questions that Regent Quito raises here, and that is the prioritization of state dollars for research. Now, that is a very tricky question, a very double-edged sword for the university. It's also a double-edged sword for state agencies. And it'll have to be dealt with very cautiously. One of the other things that has happened, I think, is that Don Rosenberg brought up to me at lunch, or refreshed my mind about it, and I think it's worth sharing, is that how do you achieve a continuity of research? If you have a problem of tagging salmon today and you want to get the money for ADF&G or the university, whoever, and then 5 years hence the salmon come back, who and how is it to be paid for in order to complete the cycle of the research question? And finally, I'd like to raise, before the rebuttal dialogue, the question of organization of research. I don't think the University of Alaska can dodge this, and I think it has been dodged too often. In the United States, we have many systems of research. We have the classic situation, at least what I went to university in the East in, where research was associated with departments, and research was a function of the furtherance of a particular professor or department's teaching activity, and the forefront of their knowledge was directly available to students. We've had the institute experience here in Alaska, and it exists in many, many universities in the lower 48 and Hawaii and so on, wherein there is a functional organization by discipline. We have also have in 11 states in this country a research organization by general research foundation or research corporation, wherein there is an amalgamation under a research business entity. The manner in which research is delivered, I would suggest, is also a function for discussion here if the panel wishes to address it. Okay, I would then like to, for the next 20 minutes or so, accept rebuttals, and I think we'll do this in a random order, in whichever, who wants to volunteer first? Would anyone like to be the first rebutter? Dr. Roeder, please. Unless, did I see anybody else?
Here. Joe, come on over here.
Juan, you're first. Go.
Okay.
I don't want to rebut. I think I just want to make a few comments. I think in listening to my colleagues in the panel, particularly the first two speakers, that they are, I would put it, narrow it down to two fundamental issues in which perhaps we have some misunderstanding. One is the definition of higher education. I take the view, and I think my student colleague here takes the view, that a university is not a collection of classrooms with teachers standing in front of blackboards. I think those times have long passed. A university is far more than that. And therefore, when we talk about higher education, we must not, in a university, we must not narrow it down to the instruction, whereby I mean the standing in front of a blackboard. The other issue that I think is the focus of this agreement is the accountability of the researcher to the university, the state, and the federal government, if the federal government is the one that funds most of his research. Research, as our colleague Krejci defines it, and with which I entirely agree, agree? Research is unpredictable. It would not be research if it were. Being unpredictable, we cannot promise results. Being not able to promise results, we cannot measure our success. We are not, on a short-term basis, accountable. It is impossible. However, look back hundreds of years of experience. Our society is based on research results.
Thank you, Wong. Would anyone like to pick that up, Sam?
I'm not going to pick that up.
Well, what are you
going to
pick
up?
Pick up something.
I say just basically that one of the things that happens when academicians talk amongst themselves too much, natives talk among themselves too much, professors talk amongst themselves too much, and researchers talk amongst themselves too much, you build a wall around you. When somebody develops a dialogue with you, you misconceive what has been said. At no time in my presentation have I ever said, in dealing with the issue of research, that I said do away with research. What I said was specific in terms of how much participation you put into research with the amount of dollars that you have to spend. And when that comes to a balance, I will go for instruction. I will go for academics. Now, that was the point that I said. At no time did I say do away with research. The other side of it was, at some point, what you do is you try to find out what you're doing and where you're going. We know that the research institutes in the state of Alaska are very, very important as it relates to the Arctic environment. Is that the priority? Do we put money into total research based on our expertise in Arctic environment when we're short of money? And do not make an overt effort to spend the money where research, in the sense that we're talking about research in the University of Alaska, under this organization, where it does not reach some other students? Do we try to make a application of money to assist those students before we expand and let research grow? Now, that's the point that I've taken. And that is a point where the animosity builds. It builds towards those members on the Board of Regents that may share my view. You know, and it comes about because people have said that what I want to do is do away with research. But that's not what I'm doing. I'm saying, let's prioritize it. So what happens then? The alienation factor goes one step further. I can read just as much as anybody else. The Research Institute comes out with an annual report, and they write in the closing paragraph. It says, on behalf of the research enterprise of the university, which has much in common with any other business, I take this opportunity of expressing my understanding and appreciation to members of the board who helped. It's very specific in its statement that says that I am not helping research. My point is, I am helping research by prioritizing and making a determination how that balance comes about. Now, if you that work in that discipline, in that environment, are callous enough to look at your own self-interest as it relates to, one, your jobs, two, the educational environment as it works within your discipline of research, and do not have a concern for people that may not be affected directly by research. If that's the case, then we have some very serious battle lines, as far as I'm concerned. If it comes down to a decision in those kind of terms, if somebody gave me the choice, I don't think we're at that point. If somebody gave me the choice and said, do you want academics or research? I haven't come to a decision on that. I think we need research. What I think you have to do is that the administration and the board, at some point in the future, as the dollars get tighter, they're not getting any more, there is not going to be produced more dollars for education in the state of Alaska. As a matter of fact, our president is going to hear today about the additional shortfall in revenues that were anticipated from the North Slope next year. Estimated to be around $65 to $70 million less than what they anticipated. So we're coming up to another determination. And I'll make a determination based on how I feel the priorities and the prioritization of a limited number of dollars for expanding what we presently have. For expanding. Now that's the point. And that's where I go the other way. But for what we have at the present time, that's fine. And if we have more dollars, put it in there.
Well, Sam, let me ask you, is your argument with research per se or with the administration of the overall situation?
My argument is one, the administration in the past and the board has not controlled where research is going. All they've done is put money into it on a year-by-year basis. What I'm saying is maybe if we hold off on that, we'll get some dialogue between the Research Institute and the administration about collectively setting out some goals so that they are able to make some determinations about where research is taking us.
Where prioritization of research is certainly, as I mentioned, a question of statewide importance. Would you also equate that with the prioritization of academic courses? For example, what happened with the Native Studies?
Well, let me say that the other side of it is that we're moving into another area of concern about academic development, program development, whereby campuses now are making a determination to say that those should be independent of any prioritization on a statewide basis. Well, that's obviously not going to happen. Because any time a body has the authority to revise and approve a budget, they're going to affect programs.
Well, in the university sector, on many areas of science or in many areas of education, there needs to be a commitment over the years. For example, in the months ahead, the culmination of a decade, almost 9 years, of involvement with marine affairs may come when the United States government asks the University of Alaska, do you have a commitment to a national sea grant program in the same way you've had to a national land grant program? How do you propose the university answer these questions?
Well, I suppose if somebody would just think about their own selves at a time when they have a commitment to educating their children and they have a commitment for raising their family. And I would just suppose that what happened when he went to the bank one day and he didn't have any money and he was out of work and there was no dollars coming in to fulfill that commitment. So I think what you have to do at those times is to look at alternatives that you may have a commitment, but if you don't have the dollars, what do? And the problem is that we have not identified in a prioritization what we would do in those kind of cases. Now, academically, we're doing that. We're coming up with an academic development plan, which is something more than the last one, which I thought wasn't worth the paper it was written on, because it didn't come up with priorities about what you do when you expand an institution, when you have more dollars to spend, and how you contract the university when you have less dollars to spend. And I think that where research is concerned in the budgetary process, that is what you have to do. You have to be able to make those determinations based on the economic situation of the present, in addition to what your commitment may be for the long term. If you have a commitment to buy a car and you run out of money to pay it, what the hell? They're going to take it away, right? If you don't have the money to pay it. It's all economics, and that's all I'm saying. You prioritize it to a certain level, and if you have the money, you spend it. If you don't have it, you don't spend it.
Thank you, Sam. Rudy, would you like to pick it up with a little bit?
I thought I'd
give you some ammunition.
Yeah, I share Sam's concern about finite amount of resources we have at this university and necessity for priorities. And I have to throw it back to him that it was Board of Regents which has never set priorities, and our administration followed the suit. We have never had priorities here. And this was at a time when money was plentiful. We still don't have it. Now, we need priorities. And without priorities, we cannot run this university. We need a concept of university, what university should do. Not everything for everybody, everywhere. We cannot afford it. I think it is high time to rethink the whole concept of university, what we can afford to do for so many and so many people in Alaska. Thirdly, I share the concern of Dr. Roederer, and I agree with him about totally about the concept of research. And where I disagree is that I'm perplexed with 290 proposals sent and quantity of money stated at the beginning which was received. There is never any statement what was accomplished for it. I think this quantitative game, you know, has to stop. There is a very dangerous cynicism about the goal of the university which is coming from above. I never forget when I heard from our last full-time president that the only thing which keeps the university going and holds together is the system of sewer pipes. And he told me that openly in two face. He was amended by his vice president for finance, who said, this is not the case, it is a paycheck. And as you remember, at that time, not even those were.
I'm glad somebody can remember that far back.
So here are our leaders. So cynicism is coming from above. What can we expect down below? Now, in those days, there was still more money than we have now. So I would urge a rethinking of the concept of the university and what we can do. I have no quarrel with research, but I emphasize that type of research, which is research, which cannot be probably written in form of a proposal. And it is that research which existed before Nobel Prize and NSF, and that which will be here still after these two institutions are gone.
Thank you, sir. A last word, I think, and most appropriately from you, Grant. Huh?
A few comments. I think it's rather nice to have the luxury of not having to go to somebody with your hand up to be able to do your research. Not all of us are in that position. A lot of research, scientific research and other research, does require funding. I think my whole ploy is that in these cutbacks, we don't cut back research first at the expense of other efforts. In other words, that since we all know we're going to have to tighten our belts, I think researchers are ready and have already tightened their belts, and a lot of us are feeling that belt tightening personally. What I would like to see is that the belt tightening not be entirely among the research faculty, and that we do maintain a healthy research effort at the university. I think that if we don't maintain a healthy research effort at the university, then we do need to redefine our definition of a university. I think what we need to do then is call it a college. That's all I have.
Thank you, Grant. My watch shows 3:33, not what the clock says. I think we can have 10 or 15 minutes of questions, and if you would, in whatever way you wish to raise them, please identify yourself and address your question to one of the panelists specifically, please. Sir.
I think mine is more a matter of a statement and part of the question also. I'm a little bit concerned by issues raised here that have not yet been addressed, and that is that there still seems to be a tendency to try to polarize the university. And I'm really deeply concerned about this. I think there have been artificial barriers produced, number one, between research as Rudy defines it and organized research, quote unquote, and barriers between teaching or teaching faculty and research or research faculty. I don't think those barriers should or do really exist. They're only created in our own minds and in our own budgetary divisions that we make. I think there's been a good case made for the fact that teaching and research form an integral part of the education together. And Rudy himself made a good supporting statements with regard to this. Now, First, with regard to the division between teaching budgets or research budgets, there has been a question of expansion. When you have tight resources, you expand it to one area or the other, as if the quote-unquote organized research is where all the research money is and all the research is done, and as if in the academic institutions no research money goes where no research is done. Now, one thing I would like to ask of Regent Keto, with regard to this, is what is the difference between having state dollars going into academic colleges in which salaries are paid for faculty members in academic colleges with release time for research, in which these dollars are really going to research, and research dollars directly going to organized research institutes? It's an artificial division.
Is that a question or a statement? I mean, I think, would you try and make a question out of it, please?
All right. I'm asking, how can you make a distinction as to what money is going into research and which is going into teaching when both institute faculties and academic college faculties are involved in both?
Right, okay.
Both from state funding and otherwise.
I think Sam's got the idea.
Basically, when you're told on a consistent basis as to the method that is utilized to get money into research, okay, and that is, we need the money in research because while we have people going from one grant to another grant, while they're writing another grant to be part of the 290 that they're going to be submitted over the next year, we need to have them on salary because we don't want to lose them. Okay? Now, if there was a relationship that one could make a determination of as to how much money you do need, okay? And it's always the same. I ask the question, how much money do you need? We need it all. You know, we have to have a reduction at some point. We need to reduce it. Well, we can't reduce it. And everybody says you can't reduce it. And I suppose when you come to that point, that's when the value judgment of the person making the decision. And I might say, as an individual then, would move to reduce that money that goes to research in a tight money situation, because even though you may have the situation that you talk about, that when you know that you put money into the instructional area, you know that the majority of it is going to be for academic courses or the instruction for students. So that's where I make that gray area definition, or I make that gray area determination for myself. You sitting in my place would make it the other way, or somebody else may make it the other way. Now, this is what government's about. This is what democracy's about. You've got an opinion. It may be in the minority. It may be in the majority. But you make decisions based on information that you have, and that's what I do.
Okay, Sam. Thank you very much. Carl?
Well, I'd like to comment on the points that I think wasn't really picked up that both Grant and Juan made about the integrated aspect of the university, the teaching and research. To me, it seems a little bit like stopping a runner who can just barely make the 400-mile, and you ask him, which is most important, your right foot or your left foot? It's really integrated. Now, I've been here for 18 years, and I've taught every year, both undergraduates and graduates, and I've been primarily funded by research funds. And I've served as a chairman of the geology department for 3 years. Four of the geology department's chairmen have been funded partly by research institutes, and one just before that was partly with USGS. The students that I have coached through master's and PhD work, about 30, none of them would have gotten through without external research funds. Just what do we do here? When we say we're going to cut the research, we're also cutting that academic program. The two are just so enmeshed that I don't think it's reasonable to talk about chopping one to chop and not the other. We finally got the university so complex, we can't do that anymore. And this one is sitting in the midst of a natural and social laboratory. Par excellence, if we don't do the research on it, then we have to decide, are we going to serve coffee to the people who come in to do the research?
Carl, one of the...
It will be done. There's no question about it. It will be done. And I'd like to just close by commenting on the outstanding music department we have here. That is an outstanding research performance that we invest their research, the performances, the excellence in music and drama, has made this really a place that attracts good people here. And we don't want to cut that out. It's the same problem, but my basic question I'd like to ask is, how are you going to cut the right foot off the runner and make him better because he's doing without one that wasn't doing as much good as the left foot was?
I think we'll leave that as a rhetorical question if we can. Seriously, one thing I'd like to mention, though, in response, partial response to your observations, Carl, is that 1 year ago in Alaska, there were 56 other universities doing business, doing research in Alaska. This year, there are 94 other universities doing business in Alaska, doing as much monetary research as the total University of Alaska. I lay that as a question before you, and you can ask yourselves why. What is happening here that makes that happen? But I'd like to give the other folks in the audience a chance. Well, I promise this gentleman here, Bob DeNumek, okay?
Jeff Cook from the Board of Regents. And Dr. Roeder made a statement that bothered me a little bit, and I think he oversimplified the problem that faces the Regents, and that is on the question of conflict between private industry and the university as it relates to research projects. There's sometimes when it's very black and white, where there's just nobody in the private sector to do the kind of research or trying to provide new knowledge that is needed in a particular situation. But there are other times when it's very, very gray, and those are the situations that we've been faced with. I don't think you can, you know, whisk away the problem by saying, place the blame on the loser. Now, you can place the blame on the loser in that situation, it happens to not be the university, if the total criteria on determining who gets that contract were other than dollars. But when it comes down to the dollar being the decision, it's very hard when the research money, be it from the federal source or the state source, is coming from the tax dollars. It's very hard when you've got an entity out there, a private sector entity, bidding on a job who has to support the university research effort through tax dollars and who does not maybe have the resources in the way of students and others to do research, probably does not have, because my experience in business versus government, the government sets out regulations and requirements for the private sector that they themselves don't follow, be it OSHA, pay requirements, overtime, the parking requirements by the borough. The federal government doesn't have to do it, so you don't have anywhere to park in the federal building. I do. You find a dichotomy there, and I think that's the problem. The private sector cannot compete with the university if it comes down strictly to dollars, because they have to abide by their set of circumstances, yet they have to support that. So I don't think your answer really takes care of the problem. I wonder if you really think, you know, it's going to be that simple as these complaints come to us to solve by just saying, well, you're the loser, go out and worry about it. And this is a problem not just in Alaska, but everywhere.
Well, I think the record, just one moment. The record will show that your assumption is erroneous, Mr. Cook. In other words, the assumption that the university wins on dollar basis, it does not, and it's provable fact.
You're sort of dominating the program here today. I think you're making conclusions for people. I didn't say that. I said when the decision. I would venture to say that there are a number of times when those entities going out for contracts make the decision on dollars. I didn't say every time it is on dollars, but I said when the decision is on dollars, and I think you misunderstood
me. Okay, thank you very much.
I have words put in my mouth.
Please go ahead.
I don't deny that I oversimplify when I say that if there is a conflict, put the blame on the loser. No doubt there will be gray areas, and I'm not a regent, and so I did not put myself into that position. However, I think that if a university does conduct research, applied research, in a fashion in which it develops new frontiers, new ideas, and passes on, after having developed, let's say, a pilot plan, passes on that information to government or industry at a stage where it can become a financially worthwhile enterprise. That is where the university should stop, indeed. That is my view. If, and I stand behind my statement, if a private firm loses to a university in a fair bid, then I would still put the blame on the loser. In other words, it should not have presented itself to that bid. In fair competition.
I won't take any more time, but it's not that simple. And,
of course it is not.
I'd be glad to change places with you when some of these, and this last one came in as a very gray area.
Bob?
Bob Wheaton. Rudy, some of the things you said about classical university were very, very interesting. And as you were talking, I began wondering how Darwin financed his voyage on the Beagle and whether Noah charged him the way they do with us and things of that sort. I wonder if you could comment on how the classical university was supported. Did they get into annual fights over budgetary increments?
No, certainly they did not. They were sponsors. You know, for Darwin Street, they were sponsors for Galileo and for Copernicus. But these were minimal sponsors. There was nothing, you know, we have nowadays. Research is very expensive enterprise now.
But one of those universities you described lasted 900 years, which is considerably longer than perhaps the University of California units or the University of Alaska.
Why don't we consider the Darwin cruise on the Beagle as a case in point?
I have no problem.
I think that's maybe one or two more questions, and we better wrap it up with apologies for dominating the meeting. Sir.
My name is Bill Zito. I'd like to ask a student point of view. And I'd like to address to Sam Keto. And it's a question concerning consistency, Sam. I share your concern over a finite number of bucks. And when I lose or when I don't have any bucks, I mean, it's not just the beer to go, it's the feed that goes. So they have to be proportioned out, and I have to make priorities. However, first comes the fat, and then comes the feed. Like the beer and then the fee. Does your position consider what the effect would be if you trim the so-called fat by prioritizing your money away from this research function of the university and funnel it into the academic or the instructional function? If you take away, I propose, the place for a student to go, then you've taken away the research. If you take away the research, you've taken away the place for a student to go, academically speaking. Pragmatically speaking, you have created a school of engineering or an institute of pragmatics, and you don't need a university, I would think. And so I'm wondering how your position supports the idea that if you reduce or eliminate where a student, an academic student, could go, what happens to your university? What does it become, if it becomes anything? Well, how do you accommodate those students that seek higher learning? Well, which is why they're there in the first place, to meet pre-postgraduate level.
You know, once again, it seems, I just don't understand that as I sit here and kind of a question comes back under the premise that I'm for doing away with research. You know, that I'm taking something away from the student. What I'm saying is that in the prioritization, if I have the ability to limit the amount of money that goes into research and control the growth by prioritization in research about where it's going, I can support reducing the expenditures into research from the state coffers. At the same time we're doing this, we are also reducing expenditures in the other portions of the budget. So what I'm saying is that and if there's a vote for one or the other, in other words, if it comes down to that somebody says X number of dollars out of research or X number of dollars, or, you know, so let's say $1 million out of research or $1 million out of education or instruction, then I would vote to reduce research by $1 million. But I haven't done away with the organization or the unit or the functions of it. It's just a prioritization, and that's how I make the priority. Pardon?
If we suppose they're separate entities, you've done away with them. You're given that opportunity to be reduced or eliminated.
Only in the sense that you're looking at the line items in the budget about where you're going to make the reductions, okay? Where those reductions in the institute are going to be made themselves. As a matter of fact, that decision would be made by the chancellor in conjunction with the directors of research about where that's going to get cut. And only because you have identified research as a separate BRU, Are we doing that? But if research was integrated totally into the Fairbanks budget and wasn't separated, you know, then you would be able to take a slice out of it or add to it based on the decisions that administratively come through the chancellor. So.
Thank you, Sam. I think I'll take one last observation. There was all right, gentleman in the back there.
Mr. Moderator, in the discussions on research, there's been discussion of priorities, and I'd like to suggest a possible basis for determining priorities, and I'd like to suggest it because I haven't heard any reference to it. Traditionally, with the university, there are three kinds of purposes that we have. Instruction, research, we talked about those, but what about public service? In looking at this question, reading about it, I don't find enough information on it. But as nearly as I can determine, public service ought to provide some insight for us as to what research we ought to be into. Getting involved in the Alaskan public on the part of the university ought to raise questions in our minds about what needs to be researched. What about instruction? You know, the public service ought to provide a basis first for the research, then the research provide the information for the instruction. Somehow, in the formula, I haven't heard anything about the public service element. And my concern is that at the University of Alaska, my understanding is that I, as a faculty member, am allowed 5% of my time for public service. That's token. It doesn't provide the opportunity for contact that is needed for the insights into the question. I'd like to suggest that and see if that seems reasonable, particularly from the point of view of the regents. We have a couple here.
I think all of us, with deference to the regents, I think they would agree with me to sum up that we do agree with you, sir, and that all of these facets have to be put together. I think what we've experienced here this afternoon is a beginning of a dialogue, and I think on behalf of the panel, I should say thank you for coming, thank you for participating, and hopefully that this beginning may burgeon into a larger dialogue that may help for a new time in our university, a new period of integration of stimulus of thought, both of a conceptual nature and of a dynamic nature to our times. I thank you all very much. Oh, I should have thanked you. All right.